My name is Eileen Malcolm, and this is Northern Elements. A podcast miniseries that takes a close look at some of the basic materials of Canada. Each episode focuses on a conversation with people whose work involves profound knowledge of their natural and cultural environments. Along the way, we discuss the relationships between ideas and practices, the impact of global networks on local ways of life, and the ways that we can adapt to ecological changes in our precarious world. In this episode, I speak with woodworker Mike Patterson and his apprentice, the architect Dee Wei, to learn about their experiences working with locally sourced wood, their personal philosophies, and their daily life in eastern Newfoundland. The three of us met at Mike's woodshop in March of 2020 and sat down with some fresh mint tea for a fascinating and often challenging conversation about their craft, beginning with their journeys to the small town where Mike has lived for over 30 years. Why don't we start with, if you could just kind of introduce yourself and your work and tell us a little bit about where you live.
Well, I'm Mike Patterson. I'm a woodworker living on the east coast of Newfoundland, Canada, in the town of Upper Amherst Cove. My family moved here 30 odd years ago, and I run a woodworking shop by myself now and build millwork and windows and doors and traditional styles and furniture, as well as other things out of wood timber frame buildings and mostly utilizing local materials.
I'm Dee. I am an architect who worked on Fogo Island for 2.5 years, and that's what brought me to Newfoundland. And I started working with Mike 2 months ago as an apprentice. I'm learning about the process of making single-hung wooden windows, as well as how to think about objects and furnitures and tools and the history of objects and how they evolve and making food.
Mike, you mentioned that your family came here 30 odd years ago. What were the reasons why you decided to move out here?
Well, lifestyle. So my wife, Lori, and myself were 31 when we moved here. We had 2 young kids, 5 and 3, and we had a third one shortly after we arrived here. We moved from Ontario, and Ontario was a nice place. We had a small farm there. We were always called by the ocean, basically, and we wanted to just give this a try, something pretty rural, out of the mainstream.
That's really impressive. What were the kinds of challenges that you faced at the beginning?
I don't know. Like, we didn't really see many challenges. It was all so exciting, and I was more afraid of not acting than I was of acting, you know. We were excited. It was an adventure. We bought an old school bus and threw everything we had inside it. Anything that wouldn't go in the bus didn't go. Open minds and tons of energy. And, you know, I had a business already in Ontario, and Lori was physiotherapist there. So if there's anything, you know, we were leaving more the land of milk and honey and heading to the unknown. Certainly, Newfoundland is economically depressed compared to other parts of the country, so it wasn't for economic opportunity that we came here, for sure. At the same time, we were pretty confident that we would find a way to make our way here.
Do you still have the school bus?
I've been through several school buses. I had an epiphany when I hitchhiked across Canada when I was 19. I got a ride in a school bus with some hippies from BC. It was really fun. Life-changing. They had the S and the H painted over, and it said cool bus.
Cool bus.
Yeah, it was really neat. So since then, I've owned a lot of school buses, yeah. I used to have a sawmill in Ontario. I have a saw lumber hardwoods, domestic hardwoods in Ontario, very different than the woods here. And bring them down. Every year, I would go up by a school bus and bring it down to Newfoundland full of lumber. I seemed to have this mindset at the time. This is in the early 90s. That Newfoundland was deficient in furniture woods. I was used to using walnut and cherry and maple and oak and hickory and ash and the beautiful hardwoods of Ontario. So I used to fill up my bus and drive down here. The reason I took a bus was in Ontario, they take the buses off the road after 10 years because they're deemed no longer safe. But in Newfoundland, where our kids aren't quite as precious, they leave them on the road for 14 years. So I would go and buy a 10-year-old bus up there at a deal when it came off, and then I'd bring it back down here and sell it at enough of a profit to cover my moving expenses, which was kind of fun. But then I did this for a few years, and it just didn't seem to make sense. And I had a wonderful week with a very well-known furniture maker from Toronto, from Peterborough, actually, Michael Fortune. And he said, well, you know, what the heck are you doing here? Have a look around. You know, it's boreal forest. There's wood everywhere. And Scandinavian countries are in the same boat as we are here in Newfoundland, the same sort of forest, larch, spruce, fir, and birch, and aspen, and poplar, and some types of maple. And he said they do quite well with their furniture, as is where he apprenticed. So we took a walk through the Newfoundland Museum collection and looked at all the furniture that had been made locally with local materials and local designs. And I was really impressed. So I changed my focus to using local wood. It made sense from my personal aesthetic, which had recently changed. It made sense from a transportation standpoint. And one of the things about the local woods was there's low impact on the environment. The birch that we use is a byproduct of the fairly large pulp and paper industry in Newfoundland. Mm. And the big companies that take the softwood, its fiber for pulp and paper, don't use the birch. It's not a suitable firewood. So it's a byproduct of that industry. So it was going for firewood or being laid waste. And the yellow birch that we prefer to use is a very hard, very slow-growing local hardwood. So we get a sawyer locally to saw it for us and use it as much as possible. The customers prefer it too because they like the idea of local materials being used. That being said, when I get commissions and people specify other types of wood, then we are quite ready to use other woods.
Back to the bus.
Well, no, I don't do the buses anymore. Actually, yeah, we had one of those short buses that we used for delivery for a lot of years. It was great going in and out of St. John's with this school bus doing deliveries.
I had noticed the trees on the drive up to Mike's place, mostly short, widely spaced spruce and fir. As Mike pointed out, they looked very different from the lush, broadleaf forests of southern Ontario and large parts of the United States. But the boreal forest sprawls over more than half of Canada, and to my mind, it's the country's most characteristic biome, full of lakes, wetlands, and billions of birds. I sipped my tea, sweetened by the honey made by Mike's bees, as the machinery of the shop whirred into action around us.
Dee, you've just handed us this really delicious tea,
yeah.
Which is made from mint that you grew and also honey that you produce. I'm interested in the ways that your work also ties into the way that you live.
Well, back to the material and it making sense, I really respect the furniture that was built traditionally. And the people who were doing that furniture then were using local materials for the reasons that it was what was available to them. So there's a bit of a paying respect to that process by doing it the same way too. We sort of really like to be as independent. I won't use the word self-sufficient because we're far from that. But we do grow 75% of our own food, and we always have, even since back in Ontario, and we raise our own animals and we use wild game and fish, and we're living in a very, very good place for people who want to live that sort of lifestyle. And so we take ownership of a lot of aspects of our life. I think that extends to the woodworking and the furniture and the work that we choose to do. Rural Newfoundland's a tough place to make a living in some respects. And so we're very versatile, you know, and with our daughter, with the restaurant next door. So she grew up here working the gardens, and she's turned that into a business now where she serves food from our gardens. It's just an extension of our life here, and I think that maybe the woodworking is a little bit like that as well, too. Our life is not very polarized, like, you know, work and play. It's all one.
One thing that I can't stop thinking about is that balance that Mike identified between work and leisure. The morning that we met, I had put on both of my warmest sweaters and helped to shovel a foot and a half of snow. It was an incredibly beautiful day, and a very cold one. But it's not just that hardship trains us to appreciate simple pleasures. It's also true that beauty can emerge out of scarcity. much like how poetry can be easiest to write when we work within certain constraints. Both Dee and Mike had a lot to say about how the climate and natural resources of Newfoundland had shaped its architecture and its arts.
I guess what's really great about the vernacular furniture of the area is the simplicity of its expression. The simplicity comes from the toughness of the environment. So that idea of living with the land and needing to create different tools and buildings to use effectively the resources around you, I find that really interesting.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's a beauty that's not a contrived beauty. It's a beauty that's the result of the way people operate organically in response to needs and response to the environment. I think about the boat in there, like that boat in the other room, which I'm not a boat builder, but I built one boat because it was really interesting to do it. And I took an old boat built by a local boat builder, and I took a pattern off it, and I took a boat building course to get a bit of information on how to do all that. It's very tricky stuff. But I'm absolutely blown away by those guys who built boats here, and they are so tied to necessity and function and their environment. They need to get out on the water and get back safely with the most amount of fish that they can get with a boat made from materials that's within their skill level and materials that are local and inexpensive or free. The result is this boat, and you look anywhere around the world, and a boat is the best thumbprint of what is function and what is necessity, and it was never about the aesthetic or the beauty, but what results from that is something really beautiful. And that is the same in maybe a chair, you know, or something too. And I love that. I love that. And I think that that extends through my whole life. Like it's more of a philosophy than an aesthetic, I suppose. It's just an approach to things and having like a reverence of things that other people have put a lot of time and effort into. And, you know, Newfoundland 60, 70 years ago was basically a self-sufficient place. There's still people in Bonavista, and we do it here too, but they keep animals for manure for their gardens, and they haul kelp from the beaches with a horse, you know, digging with a horse. They never use fertilizers or chemicals because they never could afford it. They don't know it, but they're on the cutting edge of new gardening again here now, but they never went away from it. And it's a beautiful thing, and it can so easily be done here. And people here, you know, 60, 70 years ago didn't have electricity. They weren't connected by roads 100 years ago or 80 years ago. They all went by water, and that really colors the way people still do things around here.
The island of Newfoundland is only one part of the province of Newfoundland and Labrador, and my two companions have been all over the province. These experiences included spending 2 years working for the Shorefast Foundation, an organization dedicated to promoting the artistic life and economic stability of Fogo Island, located off the northeast coast of Newfoundland. Mike had also traveled to Labrador, which is lodged into the mainland of Canada, to work on buildings dating back to 18th century Moravian missionaries.
So you've been involved with Fogo Island, you've been involved with this Moravian church. Is that something you see as a core component of your work?
The Fogo Island Inn, you know, it's a new entity. I worked for the Shorefast Foundation 8 or 9 years ago, I think they started there, and I worked with them for a few years and built furniture for them, helped them devise some of their designs and work out prototypes and produce some furniture for them. That was a really interesting project, and that one made me look a lot at design and process of designing and constructing furniture. I'd worked on lots of commissions with designers, but this one was very different, where they were trying hard for some new and different things, and I was working with an international group of people. Very eye-opening for me, and made me look pretty hard at my own feelings on design and things. The restoration work that we do, we have done a lot of that. We've been all over in St. Pierre and Miquelon. We did a lot of work there too, and that was fun because that's part of France. And all around the island, but on the coast of Labrador, the Moravian missionaries started setting up settlements there in the 1760s, and they'd been doing that in Greenland before that in other parts of the world. And there were Christian missionaries who came from Germany and set up these small communities. And at the same time, it was an interesting interface of cultures. Really, really different cultures. And so these buildings that the Moravians built with the assistance of the people of the coast of Labrador were really interesting timber frame, brick infill buildings that were very alien to the coast of Labrador, as was the whole culture. And so I've been lucky enough to work with the people from the coast of Labrador, the Inuit in particular, people who grew up in communities that had since been resettled, and work on the buildings and work with them on the buildings. And the Inatsiavut government is spearheading this. They have ownership of all of these buildings and communities on the coast of Labrador. So I do some training for them. They do most of it on their own, and they've done a great job. So, yeah, it's great that someone actually pays you to go and do something as fun as that, yeah.
I could relate to what Mike was saying. It felt amazing that I was able to be there and talk to him and Dee, to hear where their skills and interests had taken them. Our conversations also reminded me to look closely at objects that might not seem amazing at first, the objects that we take for granted. It's easy enough to cultivate care for material objects in small-town Newfoundland, particularly when you are surrounded by carefully crafted wooden artifacts, from the windows in the woodshop to the stools, tables, and plates that Mike created for his daughter Katie's restaurant down the road, Bona Vista Social Club. But I've tried to remember that lesson, to look for traces of the intentions and the people behind the things that we see every day.
You mention that nowadays carpentry is very different than it used to be, and part of the reason is that there is like a composite materials, you know, those particle boards are good for a certain part of the building, and but that's not where our work is in. We're working with solid wood, and we're working with a material that is, I don't want to say alive because it sounds very romantic, but to me this is how I feel about it, because it kind of responds to the change in water content in the air and many, many things. And it just seems like there's so many factors that you need to know and to work with.
Yeah, and it is like that, and it's a renewable material, which is a wonderful thing too, you know. I love working with wood, and everything has its place. You know, we talked about factory furniture and the IKEA furniture, and they all address different needs and cater to different interests and different socioeconomic factors or whatever. And I just selfishly choose to do my own thing.
You never really say it, but from what I can see of the objects and my also experience maybe working in Fogo Island, and we expect a chair to be more than just a utilitarian object. And maybe that really frames the way I look at objects now. Like, I can no longer just look at a chair and be like, that's just for sitting. It's like I can't look at food and say, this is just so that we're not hungry. Each object says so much about the place and the people and the environment and the culture of a place.
Even everyday objects tell complex stories about the people who made them and the materials they used, about cultures and landscapes. But all of these factors have changed over time, and are changing right now. In Newfoundland as elsewhere, climate change could bring harsher storms, higher sea temperatures and sea levels, and shifts in species distributions. I wondered if Mike had already noticed any of its potential impacts.
So we were just out walking by the beach, and we were very, very cold. And how do people feel about climate change here? Is that something that people think is happening or talk about? And if so, is it always framed as a bad thing, you know, for summers to get longer?
Well, and on a joking level, people here go, yeah, this is great. You know, another 5 degrees would just be about perfect for mm-hmm. us. We only fear we would become the Florida of the North, you know, but... No, climate change is real, and we had some huge storms this winter, and we had a storm surge that did some serious damage to the seawall in Bona Vista, and they've lost about a kilometer of seawall. Mm-hmm. It's about 5 feet to the sewer and water for the town now. And if another storm surge like that comes along, we had like 165 kilometer an hour winds. The storms are big here, but the sea surges are getting bigger. The water levels are rising. And so they're going to have to look at, we used to just always have wooden sea walls, but those are not going to do anymore. And so people definitely realize that climate change is a real thing. And certainly nobody would welcome it, especially coastal communities, you know. You know, flooding is a problem here already in some communities. And because climate change can just mean bigger fluctuations and bigger storms. And we don't want bigger storms. Yeah. And Labrador, they notice it much more up there. Mm-hmm. And the Inuit, they notice it just in migrations of animals, the way the polar bears behave. And largely the sea ice affects a lot of things, where the seals are. The seals have their pups on the edge of the ice, and so polar bears, their hunting patterns are guided by that, so they're seeing a lot of changes in the patterns of the animals and the ice and the permafrost that's thawing out and things too. So I think that we're past people being in any doubt that it's a real thing, you know, other than Donald Trump. I think pretty much everyone agrees on that.
It doesn't change how you build windows, for instance, like thinking about more storms.
I would say that we've always had one of the harshest climates. And what's interesting is we do windows for St. Pierre Miquelon. And in St. Pierre Miquelon, as in France, they use casement windows a lot. And they open out, the axis is vertical, you know. In France and Germany, I know they open in. And in that kind of climate, you can do that. But because of the wind pressure and the way the weather is here, you need like submarine windows here, you know, because the rain goes up and down and sideways, and the water pressure is huge, you know. Opening out, when the wind pressure pushes on them, it only serves to tighten them against the elements, you know, because it pushes back and makes a better seal. So then when I went to Labrador, I was quite amazed that the Moravians had come over, and they probably hadn't been here long enough to figure it out, but they have in-swing casement windows, which in Labrador would make no sense. But later they retrofitted a second set of casement windows on the inside also. If you can picture it, both sets of windows open in now. People adjusting to the climate in Newfoundland's climate, I think that we're probably at the height of the technology as far as that goes right now. It'll get better.
The idea of the punctured opening is more what's appropriate here versus the wall being fully transparent, which is the modernist aesthetic, the kind of fabric of the town talks about the harshness of the climate in that way.
Yeah, and yet, interestingly, your house has a large window in it.
Well, our house is a ridiculous house. You know, we reproduced a church, but we did that for fun. It makes absolutely no sense. It looks like a windsurfer sail, you know, perpendicular to the wind. It'd keep ours out of the equation. Yeah.
Mike and his wife Lori were extremely generous when I visited, offering us delicious food and incredible open-minded conversations. They made me feel at home, which is a tricky thing to do because, like many people tied to a university, I tend to move a lot. Years ago, they put down roots in an unfamiliar place, and they've since built something really beautiful, literally and metaphorically. I wondered what it might be like to make a home here, to start from knowing nothing, and to gradually become a key part of this resilient community.
Do you feel like a local now that you've lived here for so long?
Yeah, no, I'm not a local, and probably my kids aren't locals. I don't know if my grandchildren will be yet.
it's a long process.
Yeah, we fit in well. We came to this community that really, up until our time of arrival in 88, nobody had really moved into this community other than through marriage or something. This community was settled by three or four families. We were a bit of an oddity when we came in, but we were welcomed. We had goats and chickens and grew gardens, and they loved to have us here, and kids were coming back into the community. So from that aspect, it worked really well, and the school bus was coming, and it was nice. And at the same time, starting businesses and things was a positive thing as well, too, you know. I find in Newfoundland, and especially in our case where we weren't from here, it gave us a lot of mental space to operate. You know, people didn't have plans for us. We didn't have to conform to anything too much, and we were able to do our own thing. So yeah, we were welcomed. No, we're not Newfoundlanders. And the thing is, I don't strive to be any more than I want to be an Ontario person or anything.
Is there anything that you think people get wrong about this part of Newfoundland? People who aren't from here, do they have any misconceptions? We were talking a little bit about bad movie depictions yesterday.
Oh, I think that probably it's the same all the world over, you, anywhere you go. I've lived in two places, you know, in Ontario and here, and I like them both a lot. But they are different. And the demographic here, you know, has been shaped by lots and lots of years of bad economy. So a lot of people leave here. So it is what it is. And I've been here 31, 32 years, and I think that nobody can really just come and sum up a place too quickly. I think that's the danger, is that people do try and come here and put it in a box. And I sort of get a kick when the sociology department from MUN comes out every couple of years and lifts the lid off the pot and takes a peek inside and goes home and writes a report on it, because I don't really think that they understand. There's so much going on here in this community, and the undercurrents are so deep, and it's not just a quaint. It's the people here are, like everywhere, complex and interesting.
I know that I could never put this place in a box, however well crafted the box. I learned so much from talking to Mike and Dee, enough to have a sense of how much more I could learn if I were to stay longer. I felt privileged to be in their company, and conscious that I was only passing through. Instead of conclusions, I left with a few resolutions, all related to what Mike calls taking ownership of one's life. For example, I want to develop meaningful relationships with my local environments, wherever those might be. To pursue the arts that bring me the greatest joy and sense of purpose, and to keep having thoughtful interactions with different kinds of people.
Yeah, we do have some pretty interesting chats over a cup of tea sometimes, you know, and we have a lot of overlap and a lot of areas that we're navigating too, you know, and sometimes when you're challenged, you start to explore your ideas about things. I think that's all really important in your development, and it's ongoing for me all the time. I'm always changing. It's such a beautiful journey, you know.
You have been listening to Northern Elements, and I'm Eileen Malcolm. This episode featured Mike Patterson and Dee Way. In the next episode, Water, Dee and I head down the road to Bona Vista, Newfoundland, where we join engineer Nada Khan and fisherman Jerry Hussey to discuss the local fishing industry. Northern Elements is supported by a fellowship from the Penn Program in Environmental Humanities.